Hello and welcome to another episode of the PA Path Podcast. Before we get started today, we would like to extend a special thank you to our episode sponsor, Lincoln Memorial University. Today we speak with Dr. Gerald Marciano. Dr. Marciano is the program director at the Weill Cornell Graduate School Masters of Science in Health Sciences for Physician Assistance Program in New York City. Dr. Marciano is a longstanding leader for the profession, and he has served as director for the past 23 years. Jerry, thank you so much for joining Steph and I today to talk about Cornell. We're excited to hear about your program and about how applicants can strengthen their application to be strong candidates for you. But before we get into the program aspect of things, we'd love to hear more about you and your path to becoming a PA. How did you end up in the profession?
How did I end up in the profession? That's many years ago. I've been a PA for 39 years, and I remember I was an EMT working in a small community hospital in Brooklyn, and there were two people working, seeing patients that didn't fit the bill of what I was used to. It was somewhere between that standard doctor who was in charge of everything and nurse who did everything the doctor told them. And I found out one was an NP and one was a PA. So I was able to talk to them over the course of the time I worked there. I was in college considering careers in medicine of some type. And upon discussing with Chris, that was the PA's name, what his career was like, it seemed very appealing to me. And I ultimately graduated college, took a year off. I took a quick stab at graduate school. That wasn't for me. And then I went to PA school at Long Island University in Brooklyn. And my last rotation was my first job for 16 years, both full-time and part-time. It was a family practice clinic in the heart of Brooklyn, in a very urban, underserved area. So it was really what the PA profession was designed to do. I was taking care of all the diabetics, all the hypertensives, and I really loved it. I only moved on at a point in my life when I needed a larger institution behind the salary. So,
sure. So that would have been roughly 1987, 85, 87, somewhere in
there? 85 is when I graduated, and I worked with that doc until 2001, full-time for a number of years, and then part-time as well while I was already teaching. And I used to bring students with me on the weekends.
Oh, nice. So that's about 20 years into the profession's history. What was it like as a family practice PA in New York early on for our profession?
I was not his first PA, so there was a sense of familiarity. The staff, he obviously had some familiarity. I think I was the third PA he hired, and patients were very comfortable with it. It was a type of community where they were really appreciative of whatever care you could give. It was a largely Medicaid practice. And we would spend time with them. We'd listen to them. I knew their children. I saw the pictures they'd bring back from the Caribbean from their relatives' wakes. There's a lot of personal interaction with these patients. Introduced myself, first name basis. Most times I was called Dr. Jerry, no matter how many times I corrected that. And it was fine. They knew that there would come a point maybe where I'd say, listen, I've got to run this by Dr. Cohen. I'll be back. And they were good with it. They were good.
So it sounds like you early on started taking students in the clinical setting, which is stellar. We wish we still had as many people taking students in the clinical setting as maybe what there once were. Lots of barriers to that. But I think that's a pretty common foray into formally becoming a full-time educator. Is that kind of what happened with you? You got the hook in the clinical phase, taking students as a preceptor, and then you transitioned? Or what did your path into full-time education look like?
Very different. The seed was there. I did take students. As a matter of fact, one of the first students who came through that office with me is now the associate director here at Cornell with me. I've known him for 30 years. I was best man in his wedding 4 years ago. So it's a long history. As I said, I left that practice full time when I needed to be a part of a larger institution. And I was doing hospital-based urology for a couple of years. And at that point, I was looking to go back into family practice. So I went to my program to get a letter from the director. And he said, sure, I'll write you a letter. That's not a problem. And you probably know him, Walter Stein. He's been around a long time. Yeah. And he said, but I have an opening for an academic coordinator. Would you be interested in teaching? I was like, me? Teach? It coincided at a time in my life when it fit really well because my first son was about to be born. And it seemed like a little bit better lifestyle. So I said, all right, I will try it. And that's how it happened. I stayed there for about 7 years, completed my master's degree then because my initial degree was a baccalaureate degree. I moved up actually within the program to associate director for a few years. And then I aspired to be a program director and the opening at Cornell came up and I moved in 2000.
Walter Stein is one of those names that we keep hearing on the podcast from a bunch of different leaders. And obviously he had a strong representation in the Northeast, but he also ended up out by us in Idaho and Arizona and had some influence on the West Coast programs too.
Yeah. He was a good guy. I still quote him. He used to say to me, it takes 3 repetitions before a student learns something. It's absolutely...
That's sage advice.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm curious, Ed, as you think about the evolution from when you first got into PA education to today, what are some of those things that you've seen happen and evolve over the years in PA education, either with programs or students?
Okay, we'll start with students. Students are different. Okay. Everybody likes to throw around. I hear terms like needy. They feel entitled, but they're more educated. And I don't mean that. They're your typical educated consumer that they're coming in as now. And they have a better sense that they want to participate in the process on multiple levels, which is a good thing for the most part. I think sometimes they get so lost in that, they lose sight of why they've come. But apart from that, I think they make the journey a little bit easier on themselves in some ways when they understand what's going on behind the scenes a little bit better. I'll give you an example. When I was in PA school, the receptionist sat at a desk and there was a little swinging door in front of her. And it got to the point where we thought we would probably have a laser shoot our eyes out if we tried to cross that door. Although it was probably before we knew much about lasers. But that feeling is much more open now. Our offices are always open at the program and they just wander around. I've asked if you can, just to make sure you give a little heads up in case we have exams all over the place, but
yeah,
it's an open setting. So that's probably one way things have evolved.
Can I ask a follow-up on that before we move to the program side? It's been my observation that I think you're really spot on and that students lose their fire or they get distracted by some of that when they get into the program life. And then I think stress probably has some play in that and pushing them off their track. But what advice would you give program directors to help students reignite that fire or get back on track with what they should be focusing on as the main thing?
I think sometimes it takes a really tough decision where I have advised students, you cannot be involved in all these extraneous things. You need to focus. If someone has failed 3 or 4 end of rotation exams, but they're worried about the food drive down at the local homeless shelter, it's time they have to focus on what they're there about. I would tell them, you had the qualifications. The entire faculty saw in you the potential to complete this program successfully. Now you're being distracted and you need to get focused back on the materials at hand. Usually it works. If you look at our attrition rates, we have a little deceleration here and the zero attrition.
Yeah. And then from the program perspective, what are some of those things that you've seen evolve over time?
I feel like we were following more of an apprenticeship model back in the day. There was a body of knowledge that we held that we were looking to share, and we did it through your standard classroom stuff. And then it went through to the rotations where they did it on the truly apprenticeship model. Now it's more driven by competencies and objectives and the things that have to be documented to say that each student has passed through the appropriate levels of training and mastered it, which is a good thing. It's good for the student. It's good for the world at large if there are people that are coming out are competent. But I think you can lose a little bit of the interpersonal relationship that we used to have with students where you were transmitting this body of knowledge that way. I think overall, we're pretty much the same as where we were. They just have a heck of a lot more to learn than I did when I was in school.
That's for sure. Absolutely.
Let's take a moment for a word from our sponsor. Gain advanced clinical expertise or hone your medical education skills, all under the guidance of a distinguished faculty. The Lincoln Memorial University program boasts unparalleled instruction. Learn from board-certified physicians and experienced educators. Flexibility. Complete your degree entirely online, allowing you to seamlessly integrate your studies with your current responsibilities. Tailored programs. Choose from clinical medicine for direct patient care or medical education to become a future PA educator. And personalized support. Benefit from one-on-one mentorship throughout your academic journey. Take the next step forward to professional fulfillment. Visit the website today to learn more and apply. Lincoln Memorial University, where excellence meets flexibility for your medical future.
Given what you're saying, Jerry, tell us about your program and how you have been able to accommodate that expansive knowledge that's required for PAs to be successful.
We're fortunate that we're in an institution that has a lot of resources. Okay, we have state-of-the-art equipment, researchers. As a matter of fact, this morning, we had our first defense of the season for a thesis for somebody who's graduating. And she said to me, did you know that one of the articles I read was actually edited by my mentor, who was sitting at the table with us? She's the editor of pediatric neurology. And I said, this is one of the perks of coming to a school like Cornell, getting, you know, the information right from the source. So that, I think, is something that helps. We try to break it down. Each student has frequent advisory sessions to make sure and that they're keeping on track. We track their progress, not only through grades, but through their personal lives as well. Obviously, we can't get too involved in their personal lives, but we have resources that we refer them to when that starts to become a distraction as well. And I think this generation of students, that's probably another thing, they have so much coming at them all the time. Back when they were in high school trying to decide between the SAT and the ACT, that was like the first big decision they were faced with, and now they're in one thing after another. We try and focus them through advisement, frequent feedback, both formative and summative, and it seems to be working.
Is there anything unique that you look for? I think most programs are looking for students who are academically competent, who have a lot of the same similarities, but are there certain unique qualities that your institution looks for in a successful applicant who finds a seat in your program?
I wouldn't say there's a specific quality. I think we tend to be very holistic in our approach, and we try and find students that through their essay and through their interview communicate to us that they have lived life sufficiently and experienced life sufficiently that they can relate to patients on a professional and interpersonal level. They're faced with a very diverse population of patients when they come to New York City. Yes, our main affiliate is New York Presbyterian, and that's the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and that's one world. But then for emergency medicine or psychiatry, we send them sometimes up to Lincoln Hospital in the South Bronx, which is like a totally different experience. So we want to make sure they're able to deal with a broad variety of patients. That's probably the thing, at least, that I would look for most when I'm screening applicants.
So tell us a little bit more about your program. How's it structured? What is a student experience like when they transition through your program?
They arrive. We have probably a three-day orientation session where we teach them the nuts and bolts of where things are. We have icebreakers with them. They get to know their advisor. They get to know their class. Then they have a few classes in medical interviewing, which is in some early medicine classes. And then we take a break. It's a 9-week semester, and we carve 6 weeks out for an intense 4.5-day-a-week anatomy with dissection class. Up until they get to anatomy, it's, oh, this isn't too bad. Then anatomy hits like a ton of bricks. And
so you ease them in slowly.
Ease them in slowly, and then anatomy serves multiple purposes. They develop bonds that go straight to the program. The bonds that form around that table are amazing. And it also helps us to identify students who might be at risk, because this time they're really faced with that heavy academic load, and we can intervene. We've had a couple of students who have not been successful in anatomy, but our plan in terms of remediation has usually been, since it's the first semester, the P&G committee will allow them to withdraw and restart the program the following year. And they've all been successful after that.
When you do have that on occasion, do you typically offer or advise students who are taking that withdrawal to gather some anatomy coursework outside of Cornell before they come back?
We do. We encourage them to do that. A lot of it depends on their personal situation. Are they native to New York, so they're still living at home? Have they moved to New York, so they have to get a job now to sustain themselves for the intervening time while they're out of the program? So some of those factors can mitigate how they approach it. But all of them have completed, at the very least now, an online course in anatomy to try and bolster their knowledge. And it helps, and they develop study skills. And as I say, it's been 100% successful.
Thanks.
The remainder of the preclinical phase, there were three semesters, and they have the standard fare. Ours is shorter than most programs. We have 10 months of preclinical didactic education, which they like because it gives them 15 four-week rotations, five of which are elective. And I can tell you that is one of the biggest selling points of our program. The fact that they can explore so many areas of interest and strength and weakness. And I tell them that if it's an area you think you hate, explore that too, because you might not. And they also, during the clinical phase of the program, they complete a research thesis where they identify a gap in the literature, do a lit review, design a research study that's suitable for IRB submission. They do not have to submit it or conduct the research, and they do defend it like we were doing this morning.
Before we started recording, you were chatting a little bit about your history, and you mentioned that you'd been a program director for 24 years now. Thanks. Congratulations on that. I think we're in a phase of pretty significant growth in the number of programs, and so we are seeing a lot of opportunities for leadership advancement for faculty members to move into program director roles. What would your best advice be for someone who was either contemplating or who found themselves as a newly minted program director with 24 years of experience? What would your best advice be to a new program director?
This is going to sound very cliche, but it's be prepared for the unexpected, because a large part of what we do, I set out every year, okay, I'm going to teach this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to take this research group, I'm going to do this. And then you spend time putting out fires all the time. And those are the unexpected things. So I would think you need to have some resilience and flexibility and communication. Communication with the rest of the faculty and the staff is of paramount importance. And I am probably one of the most transparent people. We hear things from up above, and I'm pretty early to share that with the faculty so they know what's going on, so they understand where I'm coming from, what I'm dealing with. It's worked. It's worked really well.
Sometimes I found in my director roles, you have to be a firefighter, but you also have to be a jack of all trades, because you lose somebody to a medical condition that's out for 6 months, and suddenly you're covering a course that maybe you haven't taught in 20 years, but you got to teach it again just to keep the team moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, we had an expansion about 4 years ago. Well, no, 6 years ago. And we've gained a lot of faculty, but I haven't had faculty turnover since around 2014. At that time, we had seven faculty and four turned over within 3 months. Okay, so that left three of us doing everything while we were searching. Yes, we were all jacks of all trades then. But
wow,
it all worked out. That was a rough time.
I don't know. I'm guessing this is the same for you. For me, one of the greatest joys of my life is to watch where our grads end up and what they do, how they contribute. Do you have any favorite stories of some of your grads that have ended up in maybe unexpected places that you derive great joy from?
I have two alums that are here. They're working as faculty at the program. I'm very proud of them. And also, they bring real life experience, because they're not that long out of the program. It's within the last 12 years or so. So the students can relate to it. A lot of students have gone into higher administration levels now, and they do well. I know I've dealt with them where I'm looking to get a rotation all of a sudden, and they're helpful in helping us secure slots. probably the ones I'm most proud of are the ones who were preceptors, because they're really giving back with boots on the ground, taking the time out, because we all acknowledge, particularly in 2024, you're being held to strict standards of productivity, and they're taking the time to make it work for a student and giving back. So I think they're probably the ones I'm really proud of.
Sure. Well, Jerry, we always like to give our guests the last statement. If there's anything we haven't covered that you wanted to make sure that we share about your program or any other information you'd like to provide.
Obviously, I'm going to say I think it's a great program. I think our students overwhelmingly are satisfied when they've completed the program. Do they have their glitches along the way? Yes. Do they have, hiccups? Yes. But overall, they get to the point when we're talking to them near the end of graduation, when we're getting through those exit interviews and summatives and et cetera and so forth, they pretty much feel prepared. They're nervous, but they feel prepared to go out there, and they're very successful in their first jobs. I know there's one of our preceptors who's a graduate from 2004, so it's 20 years now, and she's been in the same job. She's now the chief PA of two departments at New York Presbyterian, and she did well. They do well when they get into practice. This program will prepare you to be a good clinician, a good provider, and an empathetic and compassionate APP.
Thank you so much for taking the time to share with our audience about Cornell University's BA school, and we wish you the best in your future endeavors, Jerry.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure meeting with you both.
We want to thank our guest, Dr. Gerald Marciano, for his time and insights into the Weill Cornell University BA program. His background and experiences leading an inner-city PA program in the largest city in America, coupled with his over 23 years of academic leadership experience, provided our listeners with great information. We would like to give a big thanks again to our episode sponsor, Lincoln Memorial University. Tune in next time as we speak with leaders of our profession, both nationally and worldwide.